Are you ready? Are you ready to take massive action towards building a life and lifestyle that rewards you with a fit body, endless supplies of mental and physical energy, and total freedom from guilt around food and exercise? This is Cut the Fat Podcast. What's up? It's Dr. Ray Heinisch joined here with Blythe. Hey, Blythe.
Hey, Dr. Ray. How is it going today?
Pretty good. How about yourself?
I am doing fantastic as per usual.
That's excellent. Excellent. You ready for another episode?
I am. And you know, we've got a great topic for podcasting today. We're going to kind of focus on the post 40-year-old metabolism, which a lot of people out there send questions to us through our Cut the Fat podcast Facebook page. And I think this is going to be great for all of those listeners who are curious.
And the official title of today's episode is 7 Ways to Boost Your Metabolism When You're Over 40. Now, just because you may be under 40 doesn't mean you don't want to perk those ears up and listen, because a lot of the stuff that we're going to talk about today will apply to you either now or later down the line. So just listen up.
And if you happen to be one of the lucky ones that isn't quite 40 yet, or, you know, there's a good and a bad side to being 40. With 40 comes wisdom, but with learning this little nugget that we're the 7 little nuggets we're going to be giving you today prior to turning 40 can also be extremely helpful. So, yeah, listen in.
Yeah. Now, first, let me just answer this question. Is this over 40 metabolism problem a real thing? What do you think, Blythe?
I think yes, because not because of the age. I think it has to do with mentality and our hormonal changes that happen around the age of 40.
Right.
What is your answer?
Actually, the struggle starts around 30, and a lot of people don't realize, but the body begins to shift around the age of 30. We just don't notice the impact until our 40th birthday, around that point. Part of it is mentality. Hey, you know, I'm just turning 40. But part of it is the fact that it seems like people reach this tipping point metabolically where they start to notice, hey, the weight doesn't come off very easily at this point.
Or right.
They're, you know, they're maybe they don't have as strong of a willpower muscle at this point. And there's very specific reasons why that happens around that 40-year-old mark. It could be 38, could be 42, 43. You know, it varies from person to person. Some people have great metabolisms and do so, you know, well into their 50s and 60s in some cases. But for the most part, a lot of people do notice a shift in metabolism somewhere around that 40th birthday mark.
Right. Have you ever seen the little meme that says calories are evil creatures that live in your closet and sew your clothes a little tighter every night? I think that's the theory that a lot of people go by. Like, the night of your last day of being 39, all of a sudden something shifts. And I want people to understand that this happens over time, and it doesn't happen the day you turn 40.
No, it starts around 30 for a lot of us, and we start to notice it around 40 when it seems to be around that point people kind of reach that metabolic tipping point. So right. This is a real thing, guys. You know, don't think you're crazy. Don't think it's, you know, there's a lot of things that change within us over that period of time. And it's not just metabolic. It's not just hormones. It's not just the metabolism. There's a lot that shifts.
Combination.
You know, we're always, you know, a lot of us are in a different point in our life. You know, a lot of us have kids at a certain age by that point. A lot of us have careers that are typically more stressful. We're kind of beginning that process of peaking our career or really ascending that career ladder where things start to get more busy. That has an impact on things. So there's a lot that goes on in the 40 plus life that goes beyond just what happens inside the body. So you have to take that into account when you're really considering this as well.
Right. And you don't just have to succumb to the quote unquote changes. There are things you can do about it. And that's what we're going to be sharing today.
Yeah. Okay, great. Well, let's go ahead and start with step number 1, which is get strong or get
slow.
Slow.
Yeah. Did you like how I delayed that?
That was to accentuate the slow.
So good. Once you hit 40, weightlifting is no longer an option, not if you want to enjoy a healthy, strong, and rocking metabolism. So the bad news is you can lose 3 to 5% of your muscle mass every single decade after the age of 30. And then there's a nitro boost in muscle loss after the age of 65. So you've got this little window of time that you can start to implement positive habits and change to kind of, I guess, slow the process.
Right. So if you're under 40, let's say you're 30 years old, think that now's the time to start implementing and changing your habits in such a way that promote an anabolic type environment within your body. So around that 30, what happens is the body's always in a state of breakdown and repair, right? It's always, you know, muscles are always being broken down and repaired. Bones are always being broken down and repaired. What happens around that 30 mark is that the repair process slows down some. And so the problem arises over time when the repair is slower than the damage that's occurring. So in youth, we have a lot of what we call youthful reserve, right? This youthful reserve is basically this metabolic extra that we have where we can abuse ourselves to a certain extent, to a big extent. How many of us have abused ourselves during our high school and college years?
And I'm just shaking my head. Like, what was I thinking? Was it fun? Short-lived, sure. But yes, we've all been there. And I think we've, most of us at least, have learned from that process.
It's almost like nature built into the body this youthful reserve because it knew that we were going to be stupid for all that time between birth and age 30 or so. So
yeah, the drunken debaucheries and all of these, all of these things,
Yeah, and so what happens is we lose some of that youthful reserve and the recovery doesn't happen as much. So we end up accumulating damage over the years and then that's when things kind of slow down. So what we want to do is, and everything we discuss today in one way or another is really about promoting a recovery in our ability to recover.
There you go. Okay.
Okay. So get strong or get slow, weightlifting, resistance training. At this point, you have no choice. You either do it or your body degenerates over time.
Right. Right. It's going to happen. It's not, it might happen. It is happening.
Right. And you can reverse any damage that's occurred. So let's say you're 50 or 60 years old and you're listening to this podcast and you had never set foot in a gym or never picked up a weight. Mm-hmm. If you start picking up a weight now, and I just had a discussion with a patient today. She was 65 years old and she, you know, she was noticing that her blood sugar was going up, her cholesterol was going up. And a lot of this came down to the fact, I believe, that she has lost muscle over the years and muscle is your most insulin sensitive organ in your body.
Right.
It is what dictates your insulin sensitivity. So the more muscle you have, the more sugar your body is able to tolerate. And when I say sugar, I mean starches and sugar as well. So
refined carbohydrates.
Right. And so she can get in the gym. We had a long discussion about this. You can go to a gym, start lifting weights, let's say twice a week to maintain, at least three times a week to build. And if you do that, you can have pretty dramatic improvements in your metabolism and in your muscle. And in your youthful reserve, you will restore some of that youthful reserve simply by having more muscle in your body.
That's what I was going to say. Yes. So you mentioned early on developing an anabolic lifestyle. This is something that I share with my clients a lot because I think it just takes a little bit of maybe an outside perspective. Don't focus so much on the weight or the body fat that you want to lose. You want to have the mindset, especially at this age or after 30, of eating, not eating and exercising to lose body fat, but eating and exercising not to store more body fat. So there are actions that can be taken to live this type of anabolic lifestyle.
Right. So you're basically building up the body, building up the metabolism. And it starts with the resistance training. And, you know, you've heard us discuss, I'm sure you guys have heard us discuss other forms of exercise. But at this point, and resistance training is important for everybody, not just people over the age of 40. But at this point, when you start to notice things begin to slow down for you, it becomes essential that we put that above most other forms of exercise. It should be above aerobic exercise at this point.
Sure. And us, just like everyone out there, you want the quickest return that you can get. You want to see, you want the exercise that's going to be the most bang for your buck. So that's what we're sharing.
And, you know, and think back, Blythe, to your friends who are bodybuilders, and let's say the over 40 and even over 50 people who are extremely fit that you know. And they may not be bodybuilders, but they're extremely fit. How much of their routine is resistance training or resistance training based?
95%.
Wow.
Yeah. Most of them do not do any cardio. Cardio, you know.
Consistently.
Even if it's just walking. Yes. Yes. So what I usually see the guys who really focus on putting on a lot of muscle mass or maintaining their muscle mass is they'll get on the treadmill and walk at like a 2% incline at 3 miles or 3.0, where you're not moving very fast. It's just a leisurely walk. And that's what they do for their cardio. So basically, they're just what I feel like they're trying to achieve, and what I believe they're trying to achieve when I hear from them what they think they're doing, is they're just trying to continue on with their workout a little longer. So they've really maxed themselves out. They've completely hit a wall when it comes to weightlifting, yet they want to work out a little bit longer. So 15, 20 minutes walking on a steady incline is what they'll do. And it's a leisurely walk. They're not doing it to work up a sweat and go crazy or get their cardiovascular working. Although when you have a lot of muscle, your heart has to work a little harder to pump blood through all of that. So they might, their heart rate will increase, but it's nothing crazy. It's not like they're out there, you know, jogging for 6 miles trying to lose body fat or burn more calories. That's not the objective.
Right. And yeah, you know, these aren't necessarily people that look like bodybuilders as people perceive them, like Arnold Schwarzenegger in a female's body.
Right.
They are, I mean, they look just fit, you know, they just look fit. So don't be afraid. And, you know, sometimes we forget to recognize this, but it is a fear among women that they are going to get too big and bulky.
Yeah. Not going to happen. If you reach the age of 25 and you're not She-Ra or He-Man, you never will be. Okay. And I'm sorry I have to throw that out there. But, you know, if you reach the end of puberty and you're not already, you know, the Hulk, you're never going to be. Sorry.
I don't think you need to apologize. I think people are very happy to hear that for the most part.
I hope so. I hope so. But for those few out there listening that want to become the Incredible Hulk, I'm sorry. I can help you move toward that goal if you need that, but won't ever be the goal. Anyway,
good.
Next
so
one, number two.
We beat that up. Give it to us.
Yeah. Number two is scare your body. And I love the story that you have behind this one. Will you tell us the cat and dog story?
Right. So this is a story that was in the book, The Gabriel Method. And we actually talked about this with the author of that book many, many moons ago on one of the podcasts way back when. But I loved the story, so I basically had him tell it. And it goes something like this. This isn't exactly how it's described in the book, but it's close enough. So he had this obese cat. And this cat would just lounge around the house and just do nothing but eat. Like, my kids are obsessed with Garfield right now and watching Garfield the Cat cartoon, which has been, you know, reinvigorated through Netflix. Uh-huh. And it's just like that. It's this obese cat that lives to eat and lay down and do nothing.
Uh-huh.
And so one day, you know, there's this neighborhood dog that lived next door that would, you know, bark and bark and bark. And the cat would basically sit on the windowsill and mock the dog from inside. Well, one day this cat gets outside. The dog sees it, takes on after it. And the cat runs off. And it runs off and he doesn't see it for, I think it's days. One day the cat comes back and the cat you know, strolls on inside. And what happened was weeks later, Gabriel started to recognize that the cat was losing weight. And it wasn't that food wasn't available. The same food was sitting out. It was that the cat's body just didn't seem to want to hold on to fat anymore. And what happens, and the way he describes this, is that when we scare when we do things like high intensity interval training, what we're doing is we're sending signals to the body that we are being chased by a lion or some sort of predator. And so although being able to store fat is an evolutionary defense mechanism against starvation, nature does not want you to be too overweight in the sense that you then look like a tasty morsel and you're too slow to evade capture and kill from predators. So
right. It so then the cat was signals, too fat right. and the dog looks at him and he's like, ooh, tasty snack. And the cat runs for its life. That fight or flight mechanism.
Right. And it's that fight or flight that sends the signals to the body that you better get lean or you're going to get eaten. And mm-hmm. so that's kind of the mentality of high intensity interval training and why we believe it is one of the most effective exercise tools for improving body fat, because it scares the body, meaning that it pumps out adrenaline, it sends signals to the cells that you better get lean or you're going to get eaten, and the body then causes you to burn more energy and simultaneously not be riddled with cravings and hunger so that that you eat more in relation to the exercise that you do. So that's what makes high-intensity interval training so powerful, is the signals that are being sent to the body.
Right. And all of that being said, I want our listeners to really, really pay attention, because this is really important. When you're doing high intensity interval training, you don't just show up to the gym, hop on a treadmill, jog a little, walk a little, unless that is something that is pushing you outside of your comfort zone. You have got to become a little bit uncomfortable. So if you're somebody, and I hate to use myself as an example, but I recently just kind of picked up my game for high intensity interval training, and I'll do a 45 second sprint at 11 miles an hour. Yes, with these short little legs, I can do that on a treadmill. I don't think I could run 11 miles an hour outside, but I can control the treadmill and get it up to 11, press enter, and sprint for 45 seconds. And that is so uncomfortable. By the time I get to 40, I'm like, come on, 5, 4, I gotta do it. 3. Okay, now I can turn it down because it takes like 3 seconds to wind down. So I'm forcing myself just outside my comfort zone to where my body is going to have to let out that adrenaline. I'm going to get that fight or flight response. So that's important to keep in mind. As you become more fit, you're going to either have to change the intensity of your high intensity interval training, or you're going to have to increase the time at which you're doing it. I don't think I can run any faster than 11 miles an hour, but what I can do is I can go for 60 seconds or 50 or 55, whatever, or I can add a 0.5% incline or a 2% incline or something like that to increase the intensity of that, to keep my body just outside that comfort zone. So no matter where you're starting, you have tools that you can work with. And changing it up is also something that you can do. You know, if it's winter time where you are and you only have a treadmill, well, geez, you know, go grab a gallon jug of milk and do 30 kettlebell swings and then walk on the treadmill. You know, change up the program a little bit. Keep your body guessing. Do something that's going to take you a little bit outside your comfort zone. And that's where you're going to start seeing results from the exercises you're doing.
Awesome. Very well said. And that is the key missing point. Now, there is a very easy strategy for making sure that every workout kind of pushes you to that point where you are getting that type of metabolic signal. And that is, let's say that you're doing 20-minute high-intensity interval training sessions. And 20 minutes really is a good period of time to work out for a high-intensity interval training. If you're working out longer than that, it's probably not intense enough to really trigger the kinds of changes that we want. I do know people do up to 30 and sometimes longer. I would never go above 30 minutes on an interval training session if I can help it. It basically means you're not pushing yourself hard enough. It's better to work out shorter but more mm-hmm. intense than longer and less intense.
Yeah,
so what you do exactly. is you set the weight, set your weight on the machine that you're using. Let's say you're using a treadmill and you're setting your weight at a particular point. Let's say you're 190 pounds. And what I recommend people do is set the weight on the machine to your ideal weight. So if you're 190 pounds and you want to be 170 pounds, you think that that's a weight that you would feel really good in, then that's what I would set it for. And I would always use that weight no matter what. And
okay,
then what
cool.
you do is set your time for 20 minutes, and your goal is to simply burn more calories each session than you did in the previous session. So you have to keep track of it. Mm-hmm. Now, it's not about the calories. It's about the intensity. If you're setting your weight to a higher, to the same weight no matter you know, when you're doing it, then what happens is if you burn more calories in that 20-minute sessions, it means you worked harder than the previous session, right?
Right. So it's just it's a way to measure. And that's a fantastic way. I quite often tell people, and this is the same thing only in just a little bit different form. I usually say, you know, plan on going, I say 30 minutes, but I want you to warm up for like 5 to 7 minutes, whenever you feel warm, like you can start your first interval, and then cool down for 5 to 10 minutes, probably 10 minutes at the end, just leisurely walking. So warm up for 5, cool down for 10. You've got 15 minutes in there to work in 6 sprints or 6 intervals. Mm-hmm. And if you get to the point where you can actually fit in 6, well, then the interval times are going to have to be a little bit longer. So you probably start with, depending on your level of fitness, you know, you can start with 10-second intervals or 15-second intervals. And then the next time, you still have to get 6, but it's got to be a longer, even if it's 2 seconds longer of an interval, you can measure it that way. So same thing essentially as what you're saying, cutting the time below 30, getting in a little bit of leisurely walking, which we're going to talk about here in just a couple minutes, how important that is. And really, there are so many ways. And if you guys are looking for, you know, maybe you've got a specific training program that you like to stick to and you're trying to figure out how to turn it into an interval type of program, I would certainly be happy to help with that. So you could always just send us a message through Facebook and I can help you morph your plan.
Very good. Very good. All right. And just keep in mind that if you've got a very tight schedule and you can't fit a lot of time in for working out, just keep it to 15 to 20 minutes. You don't need any more than that to send the signals that you need to send in order to get the benefit that you're looking for.
Exactly. Cool. And I have one more thing to say. I'm not trying to beat a dead horse here, but maybe you only have your lunch break. Maybe you've got 1 hour for lunch or 45 minutes for lunch. A quick walk to the gym or wherever your treadmill is can be your warm up. Hop on the treadmill, do your intervals, hop off. Your walk back to work can be the leisurely part. You don't have to do it all on a piece of equipment is what I'm saying. You know, think a little bit outside the box.
And wear deodorant.
And bring deodorant. So you can reapply if necessary.
Okay. All right. Step 3.
Eat more protein.
Very simple. Eat more protein.
Yes.
So when we're trying to burn fat, really what we're trying to do is send 2 simultaneous signals to the body. The first is food is readily available. If we don't send the signal that food is readily available, the body thinks that you're starving and it shuts down the metabolism. The second signal that you need to send simultaneously with the fact that food is readily available is that your body needs to burn calories in order to go gather or catch that food. So right. Think in terms of a cave person, a caveman or a cavewoman. If you're living out in the bush, you can't drive up to McDonald's. You need to go gather your food. So if we send one signal like food is that we need energy to gather food, but food is scarce, then the body is going to shift your metabolism down.
Right.
And
right.
It's actually what it'll do is it'll probably make you a little bit depressed because that's one mechanism by which the body keeps you close to the camp and has mm-hmm. you and prevents you from going out seeking food and things like that. It slows the metabolism down, makes you feel sluggish. So, you know, the idea is if food is scarce, it doesn't make sense to expend a lot of energy going around trying to gather food. It's more efficient for the body to slow down the metabolism rather than to have you kick up metabolism and go and find food. So,
but we want to throw that stop sign up right there and take control of that.
Right. And we do that by eating food, real food, and simultaneously moving a lot.
Yes.
And, you know, it's like my good friend Jade Tita says, you know, in his book Lose Weight Here, he talks about this concept of move more, eat more. Move less, eat less. So mm-hmm. we think that if we move more, we should eat less. Eat less, that we should move more. But that is the complete opposite of how the body responds metabolically to our environment. What we want is if we're going to eat more, we move more. And if we're going to move less, we eat less.
Yes. And that's kind of rolls us into our next little point, that the body becomes super sensitive to starvation signals after 40. Mm-hmm. So when we're young, we cut calories, we can run around all day. You know, maybe you don't have much time to eat lunch. You're a high school or college student, you forget your lunch and then you've got, you know, a sport or an activity, and you get home and it's 8 p.m. at night, you might not feel like you're hungry during that time until the very end of the day and you're famished. But I've noticed for myself that being over 40, we're the same age, so I can make fun of our age. But being over 40, I actually have noticed that I can go quite a while without feeling really hungry. But it's important for me to keep that in mind and eat, because I might not feel like I need to eat, and I certainly don't want to slow my metabolism. So it's something that kind of leaves my mind. I leave the house, I forget to eat, and then I'm like, oh wait, and I don't even feel hungry. So that's kind of the problem, is I don't feel hungry when I really need to eat. I've noticed that. I guess that's, you know, something that's common. I really didn't put a lot of thought into it until you and I started talking about this. So it's important, you know, kind of just like drinking water, guys. If you need to set a timer, hey, it's 8 o'clock or it's 9 o'clock, I need to go get some food in my body, do that, because eventually it will become a habit and you will kind of, I don't want to say retrain your metabolism, but you'll maybe help your body continue to send hunger signals so you remember to eat. You can rely on your body a little bit more if you keep that as a habit.
Right. And what you said is, you know, the body becomes super sensitive to starvation signals after 40. It's such an important point. And if you're perimenopausal or menopausal, even more so. So this, the fat cells will, you'll activate all the genetics that lead to fat storage when you start to starve yourself, or what we call diet. So yeah, you've got to be really good about getting a good bit of quality food in the stomach in order to make sure that those calories reach the cells so that the body knows that food is abundant. And then simultaneously, you know, we talked about resistance training. We want to make sure that we're increasing our protein intake in order to do what is step number four, which is
recover. And it's really important that you're getting in enough proteins so that your muscle soreness doesn't last for a week and a half. You know, we've got to provide our body with the building blocks of what constitutes our metabolism, and that is building lean muscle mass or allowing it to repair by eating protein. And, you know, I'm not a huge advocate for like bodybuilding supplements, but one thing I do suggest to my clients is get some branched chain amino acids. Have a look for something, you know, maybe I like the flavored ones. I know that probably isn't fantastic, but a naturally flavored one would be great. I've been taking branched chain amino acids probably since I was about 25, and I find that they really kind of, number one, help energize me, and number two, the recovery process, because it's become a little more lengthy for me these days, that if I have a water bottle or something with some branched chain amino acids in it when I go to bed after an extremely difficult workout, usually legs, because, you know, I've got those soccer legs. I have those soccer legs. I don't know. They're 43-year-old soccer legs now, right?
I'm not sure. I hear you.
But for those who binge listen, they might get, you know, binge listen to our podcast, they might get a little giggle out of that one. But honestly, the soreness lasts a heck of a lot less time. It doesn't last as long, is what I'm trying to say, when I utilize something like branched chain amino acids.
Because they're very anabolic to the system, and especially in the over 40 body as well. Part of it has to do with the fact that we don't digest things as well, especially protein as we get older. And so, you know, making sure that you're having the branched chain amino acids, especially when you're doing resistance training, in addition to the protein that you're consuming, will help your body to recover from that activity much more aggressively. Because as we know, repair and regeneration happens more slowly after 40, which we described in step number one, when we talked about the fact that we use that youthful reserve. Youthful reserve, by the way, is all about repair and regeneration. It simply means that we repair and regenerate things much faster. And then as we use that youthful reserve, I don't even like saying that, because 43 is the new 23, right, Blythe?
Yeah, absolutely. Are you kidding me? I'm way better at 43 than I was at 23, I think. That.
So, yeah, eating protein is recovery. But also we talk about not just delivering the nutrients we need to recover, but also doing things like yoga and or meditation. And after 40, I recommend doing both, but you must choose at least one of them. Why? Because our brains at 40 are oftentimes working on overdrive, right? We typically have more stress in our life, more responsibility. And because of that, our brains are constantly working, and we need to give our brains a break from that. Because what suffers if we don't? It's our willpower, our self-discipline, both of which we need in order to make the types of changes that we're looking to achieve.
Exactly. Yeah. So as you know, I recently started a Wednesday hot yoga class. And let me tell you that I couldn't focus on anything other than making it through that class. Not that it was so challenging, but it was something new. And I found that it cleared my mind of everything that was going on in the outside world. And I was really just kind of stuck in the moment. And that's something that you just said, you know, our minds are going 100 miles an hour. You're always thinking about, oh, are my kids okay? You know, you're thinking about your job, all of those things. It's so important to just clear your mind, if only for 45 minutes to an hour, can make a huge, huge difference.
Agreed. And it's essential after 40. Choose one or the other. You don't need to go to any class in order to do meditation.
Right.
You don't even have to go to a class to do yoga. You can. There are lots of apps on the iPhone and the smartphones and the iPads and such. I love a yoga app on that I use. I think it's what? Giam? What's the name of that company that does the yoga?
I think it's Giam.
They have a great app, and that's the one that I like to use at home. And so you don't have to go someplace to do it. I think it's nice to have a scheduled class that you mm-hmm. go to, whether it's yoga or exercise or what have you. But mm-hmm. It's not necessary. So if that's not
right,
your thing, just do it at home.
Yeah, and YouTube is another good place to find videos like that. Also, there are meditation apps, and I know I've downloaded. I think it was Headspace that you told me about. Is that what it's called?
Yes.
Headspace, which was a great intro one. If you guys are interested at all in just learning how to meditate for a few minutes a day, I can't tell you how many great naps I took after listening to that gentleman's voice. It's just amazing.
And there's a free app called Smiling Minds, and it's right up there. It's very similar to the paid app, which is Headspace, but Smiling Minds, check it out.
Okay, cool. Step 5, this kind of leads us right into our next one, is sleep. When you're over 40, we choose to sleep less because we're generally, like you said, kind of reaching a peak in life, whether it's with your family, kids, business,
careers.
You know, maybe you've got your fingers in a bunch of pies.
Mm-hmm. And
just whatever it is.
Yeah, we're going to talk briefly about hormones in one of the coming steps, but one of the hormones that we have a tendency to see plummet around that age of 40 is growth hormone. And growth hormone is labeled as the youth hormone because it is so essential in repair and recovery. The best way to recover and improve our growth hormone levels is through what?
Sleep.
Sleep.
And getting to bed just a little bit earlier is something that I've been, you know, no more all-nighters, no more 2 a.m.ers. I'm not a night owl. I think you're kind of a night guy, aren't you?
I am. Mm-hmm.
What time do you typically go to bed?
Well, I'm shooting for 11 to 11:30 now because I'm turning myself into a morning person. So.
Oh, okay, yeah. Cool. Yeah, my head hits the couch at about 9:30 and I pass out by 10. But that's because I get up early and, you know, do all the early morning things. It's just the type of lifestyle I live. But sometimes I'll wake up and feel like I'm hungry and want a snack before I go to bed, but I'm being very diligent about not just even grabbing a bite to eat, maybe a glass of water instead, or drink some branch chains, and then go to bed, you know, move from the couch to the bed.
Right.
Because eating right before bedtime, you know, isn't something that is great for growth hormone production.
Right. And the big problem with lack of sleep is it compounds issues that are already functioning suboptimally simply because you're over the age of 40. So when you choose to sleep less, insulin levels rise, which they are already elevated because mm-hmm. as we age, we lose insulin sensitivity. Growth
right.
hormone levels drop, and the end result is more fat storage and slower recovery. So never underestimate the power of a good night's sleep, especially when you're over the age of 40.
Okay.
Cool.
Simple enough. I won't do it. Step number 6, simple, walk more. And I'm talking leisurely walk, right, Ray?
Yeah, leisurely walk. Don't put the short shorts on and go for a speed walking session. That's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about just going for leisurely walking. The more you walk, the better your metabolism is going to function.
Right. And after 40, so like you said, our cortisol levels rise. That's the stress hormone.
Right.
Insulin levels rise as well. due to the being over 40.
Yep.
And then we're more mentally exhausted from the family choices, the everything else you've got going on in your life. So we burn fewer calories.
Due to less muscle.
Because
and long
due to
workouts.
Less muscle. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So we recover less due to busy schedules. But when we walk, leisurely walking, it lowers the cortisol levels. It improves your insulin sensitivity. It relaxes your mind. You can kind of feel the stresses slipping away as you go for a nice leisurely walk. Take a big breath of fresh air and relax your shoulders, you know, kind of run yourself through just a quick meditative session just while you're walking and really enjoy what you're doing. This burns calories and doesn't increase our, what do we call that? The compulsion engine.
Right. We talked about that recently in one of the podcasts where your body will be, if you do a lot of aerobic exercise, for example, your body is, it compels you to eat more and move less because it's trying to restore those calories. But with walking, that burns the calories under the radar. So we don't get that compulsion engine activated, and it doesn't cause us to eat more and move less throughout the day.
Right.
Plus,
And it aids in recovery.
Yeah, it aids in recovery because walking improves blood flow. And by improving blood flow to the muscles, you get more nutrients delivered. And again, that enhances recovery. So walking is optional in youth, but necessary after 40.
Ah, ding, 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 golden nugget. All right, so we're moving on to step number 7, treat hormone imbalances. And I think this is a good one for you to address because we're talking about bioidentical hormones, right?
Right. Now, you know, I do a lot of study on aging because I am obsessed with not aging at an accelerated rate.
Me so, too.
You know, I'm gonna leave this earth kicking and screaming. You know, the Grim Reaper is going to have to drag me out by my toes because I do not, you know, I love life. And so I'm all about the anti-aging. It's a lot of what I focus on here in my practice at the Expert Nutrition Center. So one of the key determinants of aging, or one of the key factors that ultimately causes an acceleration of aging, is hormonal imbalances. When our testosterone levels drop, estrogen levels drop, growth hormone levels drop, all that, you know, when our metabolic soup gets out of whack like that, aging has a tendency to be accelerated. And so anything we can do to restore hormones to more youthful levels will have a dramatic impact on how we feel and how our body burns fat and recovers from exercise and activity. Now, here's the thing. Lifestyle can go a long way to restore hormone balance. It doesn't have to come out of a bottle or an injection for a lot of us. Now, it's not to say that eventually you won't have to pursue or at least look into some of those more heroic measures like certain hormones for men and women who just don't seem to be responding to the lifestyle changes that occur. Mm-hmm. But if you're between the ages of 40 and 50, I believe if you do things right, if you live a super healthy life, you can restore hormone balance to what we see in 25 and 30-year-old people. Okay? That is if you make really good choices with lifestyle.
Right.
Now, once you get over 50 and into the 55, 60 range, you may need to seek out more heroic measures to keep those hormone levels at a more youthful range. But don't ignore lifestyle because it can have a dramatic impact on how well balanced your hormones are if you're 40 plus.
Right. So start there. Start with the healthy lifestyle.
Right.
And then if you're having difficulty, seek out someone such as yourself.
Yeah. Or a holistic physician, somebody who's schooled in what's called bioidentical hormone replacement therapy. And you know, just go through the pluses and minuses. You know, everybody's an individual, so there are factors that you've got to take into account that may apply to you and not to other people. So if they're doing it right and restoring the hormones in the right form to the more youthful levels, it can have a dramatic impact on how you feel, how your metabolism works, and how you age. There's no doubt about that. Are there risks with cancer? Well, yeah, I think those risks apply to some people. But if it's done right, you can really prevent a lot of that risk and in some cases even decrease the risk of certain types of cancers by having the right blend and the right mix of the right hormones. And like we say, achieve what you can with lifestyle and then work from there with a with a physician who's schooled in bioidentical hormone replacement therapy, and then go from there.
Okay. You know, great golden nugget.
Suzanne Summers has some really great books on this subject. And I know what you're thinking. Okay, Chrissy from Three's Company. Is she
exactly
really the expert? But I will tell you that her fame has, and her interest in this topic has allowed her to really be exposed to and interview some of the top minds in bioidentical hormone replacement therapy. She knows her stuff, and the people that she interviews in these books know their stuff as well. So she's really a good resource as far as the books to go to for some lay knowledge on the subject. And then you seek out a holistic physician or somebody who's well-schooled in bioidentical hormone replacement therapy, and you get some support that way. Cool?
Okay. Very cool. Yeah. So if you're looking for a good book to read, that would be one to pick up.
She's got a bunch of them. I don't know specifically which one, you know, focuses on hormones, but she's got some really well-known people in the holistic world in those books, like Jonathan Wright, who's very well known. I think she discusses things with Julian Whitaker, also very well known. I don't know if Alan Gaby and some of the other physicians who are very well known in the holistic world, these guys are brilliant as it pertains to hormonal balance. So check it out.
Very cool. Very cool. Hey, we cannot forget to do a shout out to one of our listeners. His name is Lee Beat. Hi, Lee. Hi, Lee and the Beat family. Thank you so much for turning your family into Cut the Fat podcast listeners. We do appreciate you. And guys, we actually really appreciate any time you go on either on Facebook and or iTunes to rate us. It helps us grow, helps us gain a little bit of popularity. And, you know, we're all about bringing as much good free information to all of you as possible.
Right. And the Beat family, I think, is in the UK, right?
Yeah, I think they're in the UK. So thanks again, you guys.
Thanks for listening. And I think that does it for today's show, right?
Awesome. Yeah. If you guys are interested in Cut the Fat Coaching Club, I know we literally got a message while you and I are here podcasting, asking if it was still open. So if you are interested in being on the list for when we do open registration once again, just go to cutthefatpodcast.com. There's a big, I think it's a red button. It's either red or yellow button. There's a picture of Dr. Ray there, and it says for more information or to get on the list, click here. Just click on that button and enter your email address, and you will be sent an email letting you know that registration is going to open for that.
You got it. All right. Check us out on Facebook. Okay. Just search for Cut the Fat Podcast. You can leave us messages there. Hey, if you want a shout out, let us know. And just also let us know maybe how you've used Cut the Fat Podcast to get healthier. Like, what were some of the golden nuggets that stuck out to you that you've utilized? I think we had a recent listener who just reviewed us on Facebook who was talking about how she used to be a big cardio person. And now since she's been listening, she's shifted her workouts and shifted her lifestyle in some of the ways that we describe. And in the first week, she lost nothing. But in the second week, she lost 6 pounds, right?
Yeah, that was crazy. Yeah, I just got goosebumps. No, I love those types of comments that we get. I love knowing that we're impacting people's lives all around the world positively.
Excellent.
So you know what I think we should do, Ray? I think we should do a podcast with things that people have implemented that have worked for them, kind of like a recap, maybe. And if we can get some people to share their journeys with us, we can do a podcast on it. Sound good?
That sounds great. All right. We'll see you guys next time here on Cut the Fat Podcast.